This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we speak with a Port Townsend resident who offers evidence that major news media outlets have been spreading fake news about flying saucers for decades. And now, we go inside the Compass. Fake news is a hot topic these days, mostly with regard to political issues, but is it possible that the media have been secretly publishing fake news for more than 50 years on the subject of unidentified flying objects? That claim was explored at a recent meeting of the Olympic UFO Meetup Group in Port Townsend. KPTZ News attended the meeting, then spoke afterwards with Maureen Morgan, facilitator of the group. We examined those charges against the media and also questioned her about proof that flying saucers are real. We think you'll find her answers well worth consideration. Maureen Morgan is a state section director and certified field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network. Your meeting topic this week was manufacturing reality, news media complicity in the UFO cover-up. Much of it came from a video lecture by an independent journalist named Terry Hansen. Would you summarize for us some of the main points, especially those that resonated with you?
I've had a lifelong interest or even fascination with the media and how it controls and manipulates and massages information that goes to the public, how it shapes public opinion. And the information that he presented in his book was rock solid. It was documented, hard evidence that the elite media organizations have been complicit with intelligence agencies within the U.S. government all the way back to World War I, and basically has functioned as a propaganda arm of the U.S. government. And that many issues have either been shaped to meet the needs of the U.S. government or covered up altogether. You know, he presented a lot of evidence about the UFO issue being covered up. He emphasized in particular the elite media's involvement with the CIA. And I just like to read a couple of quotes from directors of the CIA that really get this message across.
Sure.
"We'll know our disinformation campaign is complete when absolutely everything the American people believe is false." And this was a quote in 1981 by William Casey, who was then the director of the CIA. And another one is, "The CIA owns everyone of any significance in the major media." And this was a comment from William Colby, former CIA director. So it gets the message across that the media and the U.S. intelligence are like almost like one and the same, that the information you get is rarely going to be the truth. It's going to be like a manipulated truth.
Can I push back on that just a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been a member of the media, mainstream media, my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded as if pretty much the entire media was under the thumb of the government, and they just are mouthpieces for whatever needs
That's
to put
right.
out. Having been in the media, I can tell you for a fact that it's not true that everybody or the vast majority of them, as I mentioned to you at the meeting itself, I do know that the CIA has employed reporters, especially in foreign correspondents, and they do have people on newspaper staffs and on television and radio, maybe not so much radio. Radio is always, especially KPTZ, is always honest, direct, and eclectic, authentic.
It's local.
And it's local. But I guess the bottom line is, I don't think it's nearly as widespread as Terry Hansen makes it sound.
I will go with your observations because you have an inside perspective, and I'm going from a perspective of the information that I've read, that I've gleaned from secondary sources.
Uh-huh.
You're a primary resource. Terry Hansen is a secondary resource.
Okay.
So that your view, I have to take into account.
Were there other points that resonated with you from Terry Hansen's piece?
He emphasized that most of the UFO coverage appeared in the local press, rarely in the elite media, which was much more under the influence of the government. His two main points in the book, though, UFOs are real, and second, the truth should not be under the control of elite factions that seek to define reality for their own purposes. One of the areas that Terry Hansen emphasized is that the press must serve as a watchdog protecting the interests of the people at large and not serve as a lapdog that's ready to answer the biddings of its master. The press must protect the interests of the people.
Right.
And not see, and not be
a lapdog.
And
I've heard those terms before. And again, speaking from my experience in the media, for the most part, all of us that got into it had exactly those goals. And for the most part, and I've been in both in management and as a reporter and as a columnist, those are our goals. And we feel we serve our readers, not our masters in the sense of our bosses. However, I do know it's true that there is spin in the media. And the spin sometimes comes from, shall we say, less than entirely above board and honorable agreements between government types and media types. In other words, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. We don't want you to put this out. We would rather you not focus on that. Those sorts of things, a gentle arm twisting, you might say, to sort of manipulate the media coverage. That does happen. I will grant you that. Now, that leads me into my next question, which is the term conspiracy theory itself. It's taken on a negative connotation, and it's used to denigrate people whose theories might actually be right. For example, the Manhattan Project was a conspiracy theory for years before the world found out it was true. The U.S. government really did create an entire secret town in Tennessee to build the first nuclear bomb. Do you think the government and or media have purposely tried to turn the term conspiracy theory into a joke to serve their purposes?
Absolutely. And I believe that Wikipedia is probably an arm of the same government. Wikipedia liberally uses conspiracy theorists for anybody who threatens the status quo. And even with UFOs, if you look up UFO believers on Wikipedia, you'll find that they have labeled it as a conspiracy theory, even though Nancy and Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter reported seeing UFOs, which means they are, by Wikipedia standards, kooks.
That is true. Yes. I've seen the video of Jimmy Carter talking about the UFO sighting he had.
That's right. So I believe in you, when you ever have an area that threatens the status quo, threatens big business, threatens the government interest, whatever that might be, then the term conspiracy theorist is brought out basically to dismiss it, to ridicule it, to turn them into kooks.
It sort of makes sense. I mean, I can't say for a fact that's what they're doing, but that in itself is a conspiracy theory, that the government is trying to make conspiracy theorists become a joke. It's interesting. When and how did you get interested in UFOs?
Well, I've always had a passing interest in UFOs and ancient civilizations. I started off 30 years ago reading Eric von Daniken's Chariot of the Gods, and I remember how mesmerized I was with the book, but it was mostly a passing interest until I relocated to Port Townsend about 4.5 years ago and started to meet experiencers who were disclosing their stories to me that just left me absolutely with a dropped jaw, that left me so perplexed, because these people were highly credible and they were telling me about events that had happened as long as 20 or 30 years ago that they had never talked about. I became involved with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, in order to better understand what was happening to those people. I've never seen a UFO, so my interest was trying to figure out what was happening to these people who I believed were recounting events as they had happened to them.
We're speaking with Maureen Morgan, who is State Section Director and Certified Field Investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, otherwise known as MUFON. You have a degree in communications from the University of Iowa, and you seem quite rational and highly educated. Do you ever worry that people might brand you as a crackpot because you believe in flying saucers?
I absolutely don't care what they brand me at. And because I believe there is a UFO cover based on hard evidence that I've gained not only from personal discussions with people I've met, but through my work as a UFO investigator through MUFON, that I would be remiss by not going out and declaring that, yes, I absolutely believe in UFOs. If I believe in UFOs, it needs to be made public. I don't care. It would be better to be called a crackpot than to withhold information because I'm afraid that it may somehow negatively impact me.
Now, because I'm interested in the subject of UFOs, and I'm always willing to look at facts, people have asked me, well, if flying saucers are real, why hasn't one landed on the White House lawn? What would you say to people who dismiss the whole idea for lack of any tangible proof?
But there is tangible proof. There's mountains of it.
Give me a couple examples.
Well, first
tangible
of all,
proof.
As far as landing on the White House lawn, they would probably be shot. But
yes.
In 1952, there was a UFO flap over the White House. It was documented not only in the press, but by hundreds of people who witnessed dozens of UFOs in the sky for several days over the White House. Jets were scrambled that couldn't keep up with them. That, to me, is about as close as landing on the White House lawn as it comes. There have been many documented cases, such as Rendlesham Forest in Britain, which back in the early 80s was the largest U.S. base offshore.
I've seen
yes,
video,
that's right,
and interviews with the officers, the military officers who were there and saw, and the drawings that they made,
that's
of
correct,
the craft that they saw land.
And these cases were investigated by the head of their security team. This was not only the largest U.S. base outside of the U.S., but it also had nuclear arms, although at that point, nobody knew.
Here's my question for you, Maureen. I said, give me some tangible proof.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have are sightings over the White House.
Mm-hmm.
We have reliable military people saying they saw something,
right,
making drawings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was always fascinated with the Roswell case because allegedly there was a crash. There were materials.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of witnesses. There were alien bodies, allegedly. But we don't have them. We haven't seen them. If there's a conspiracy by the government to cover it all up, they've done a wonderful job because we don't have a flying saucer and we don't have a body. Can you offer any tangible proof that makes you convinced that UFOs are really real and from extraterrestrial locations?
Well, it's hard to actually have the proof that they're from extraterrestrial locations. But I think if you looked at the Phoenix Lights,
yes,
the presence of a huge triangular craft that traveled basically from over Phoenix down to Albuquerque along a main highway that was viewed by thousands of people, including the governor,
correct,
who first denied that it was anything other than weather balloons, but then confessed that he indeed had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
This was a craft that was huge.
And there is actual video of that.
There is actual video. That's right. Many, many people saw this craft that literally blacked out the sky. There is a lot of evidence, and it was viewed by many, many people. And the counter evidence that was produced by the Air Force afterwards, they actually sent up weather balloons after the fact, filmed that, and then tried to pawn that off as what really happened.
Hmm.
So I think the Phoenix Lights is probably the single best documented case of a UFO sighting,
yeah,
that cannot be simply explained away.
It's interesting because there's tons of video evidence of things that look like flying saucers,
mm-hmm,
but it's pretty easy to fake a video. And I know a guy in Hollywood who put together some amazing fake videos. Anyone who watches Star Wars or any other movies can tell you that it's really easy to make a very convincing video of what looks like an unidentified flying object, which is why, again, as a journalist and as somebody who's interested in real science and in facts, I want to see it. I want to touch it. I want someone to say to me, this is absolute positive proof that flying saucers, UFOs, are craft from other civilizations, and we just don't have that yet, unfortunately, from my standpoint. Would you concur?
No.
Okay. Tell me why.
I agree that there are many, many sites on YouTube that submit either hoaxed photographs or they give out information that's just totally wrong in order to get clicks. Because they can generate, clickbait generates money for them.
Sure.
There's probably far more fake sites on YouTube than there are ones that present real information. But for instance, at MUFON, we will get video footage that someone has taken from their cell phone. And we can put them through programs where we can see the type of phone, the time of day, everything about how that particular footage was taken.
So for someone who's a agnostic skeptic, in other words, they think it's possible, but they just haven't been convinced yet. Can you think of any sources of media, and by that I mean documentaries or books that are really authoritative that, in your mind, are pretty convincing evidence that this is a real phenomenon?
Well, I have several researchers I'm very high on. Linda Moulton Howe, who has a report on Coast to Coast every third Thursday. And she's an Emmy Award-winning reporter, highly reputable. I give her very high credence so that when she reports something like a sighting, she has done her research. Another one would be, say, Robert Hastings, who has impeccable credentials for researching UFOs and the military installation connections.
And you mentioned Coast to Coast. Just tell people what Coast to Coast is.
Coast to Coast is a radio program that comes on every night from 10 until 2 o'clock in the morning, and it covers a lot of paranormal issues. And you can also listen to it on YouTube. But what Coast to Coast does is introduce you to a lot of people you need to know more about. Like, I first heard an interview with Robert Hastings on Coast to Coast. I know about Linda Moulton Howe because of Coast to Coast.
And I'll mention one more. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen a lot of video and documentaries, and I put quotation marks around documentaries about UFOs. I read a lot of books, most of which I came away shaking my head saying, they haven't convinced me yet. This is a little dubious, but there is a documentary called Out of the Blue.
Yes.
And
yes.
You could see it for free online streaming. Just Google Out of the Blue UFO documentaries, and you can watch it there. And that has credibility because they interview Gordon Cooper, former U.S. astronaut, military people. They concentrated on what you would call qualified observers or
trained observers.
Trained observers. These are people that know something unusual from something that would be, you know, can be easily explained. It was quite convincing, and that's the only one that I've ever seen that I thought, it's hard to argue with what you're looking
that's
at right
correct.
Now. If you know, do you think most of the people who come to the Olympic UFO meetup have seen a UFO, or they're just interested in finding out about all of this?
It's probably 50-50.
Ah.
They all have, these are very, for the most part, educated, curious, really interesting people. And many of them either have had experiences, or they know people who have had, or simply believe that the phenomena is real. And the Olympic UFO is really the only venue around, the only group around, that talks about subjects that are otherwise never discussed. One of the features of the Olympic UFO meetup that I especially like is that it meets for 2 hours at the Port Townsend Friends Meeting House, and it's a structured meetup. I always have a presenter or a focus topic. And then after the meetup, I invite people to come over to my house, which is just a few blocks away, to either continue the conversation, continue the discussion of whatever the focus topic was, but also to provide a safe space for people who are experiencers and may have would like to talk about their experiences in a safe environment.
So of the UFO cases that you have investigated, Maureen, which stand out as the most remarkable and why?
There's three that really set me thinking, and ones that I absolutely could not find explanations for. One was reported by a Canadian trucker who's been on the milk route between Canada and Seattle for the past 10 years, driving, you know, semi-trucks. And he was going north, and he was about at Ferndale. And all of a sudden, he saw a huge V-shaped object hovering, basically traveling down above the southbound lanes of I-5. And he first saw it through his windshield, and then he washed it through his window, opened the window, stuck his head out, followed it behind, and it had lights, three lights, one a light on both the sides and in the middle. And then he got back to Canada. He researched every place that there could have been lights that could have in some way or another confused him. And we only got one report for this big craft, which hundreds of drivers must have seen. And because of his credibility, you know, I could not find an explanation for that other than some kind of black ops plane, something that was military. But I could not explain why they would choose to travel down I-5 in view of hundreds and hundreds of drivers. So that was unexplained. There was another case that I investigated where a gentleman over by Kameno Island, I think it was Kameno Island, reported standing outside and he saw this cube, black cube, hovering over the Cascade Mountains, which we estimated were 40 miles away. And then when I asked him, well, could you take your cell phone out and hold it at arm's length and try to give me some idea of how big this box was? And it was approximately half the size of his cell phone, 40 miles away. So he started telling me about how during the late 60s and early 70s, when he was in the military, he served as a UFO spotter on ships in the Mediterranean.
No kidding.
No kidding. So anyway, I started to do my research. And see, this is where being a UFO investigator is really fun. And discovered that there was an Air Force textbook that was in use between 1969 and 1973 that had a whole chapter on identifying UFOs. It went back and talked about how UFOs have been visiting the planet for 47,000 years, went through all these different areas where they have been documented in India. I mean, it's the real deal.
This is a government book.
This is a government textbook. And this was probably the textbook that he studied to be a UFO spotter. Anyway, it was very clear that during the late 60s and early 70s, the military was still open enough to regard UFOs as real. This chapter absolutely made it apparent that the government believed that UFOs do exist and we are being visited.
I don't imagine you're a Star Trek fan, are you?
No, I'm not necessarily.
Star Trek The Next Generation, the ship of the Borg, a cybernetic alien, was a black cube.
Well, maybe there's really Borg. This actually kind of spooked me out because I looked up black cubes online and whatever, and everything I came up with, I didn't want to know about.
Okay.
So on the basis of his saying that he was a UFO spotter during, well, basically the Vietnam War, and that there was a textbook that actually had a chapter on identifying UFOs, I closed that case as unexplained. Another case that I really scratched my head over and spent many hours talking to the Washington State MUFON director over, and it involved witnesses in Tacoma, one who had just returned from deployment in the military, one who had just returned from deployment in Afghanistan, and another who was retired military. And they were sitting in the backyard, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and all of a sudden, they see 6 missiles arcing over Tacoma.
Missiles.
5 missiles.
Identifiably as missiles.
They identified them as missiles.
Okay.
Only the weird thing was they were not missiles that they had never seen before. They could see, like, the afterburners. There was no sound, there was no smoke, and they were basically arcing over Tacoma, heading southwest. They sent diagrams all where they were at, where they saw them, the angle of the arc. You know, they did everything they could to help us investigate this very mysterious case. Why would there be missiles? And the only place that we could figure out where they might be coming from was like Boeing Field. I mean, that was the only place that was anywhere near the direction that they saw them coming from, the northeast. And oddly enough, probably less than 10 minutes earlier, somebody had reported seeing 5 UFOs traveling from just east of Tacoma, southwest, over to heading for Tacoma. You know, so it would appear that there might have been a relationship between these 5 UFOs and the 6 missiles arcing over Tacoma. It's clearly went down as unexplained, and, you know, we just have no idea what happened. There was one case, though, that I investigated privately that really perplexed me more than any other case that I've had. And that involves a case that I heard about through Peter Davenport from the UFO Reporting Center. And he gave me a call and said that somebody from the Port Townsend area had contacted him about an explosion that he had witnessed in the air above Port Townsend. But he had hung up before giving his contact information. He suggested I poke around and see if I could figure out who it was and look into it. So I did poke around and discovered it was somebody who attends my UFO meetups, and I had his contact information. And I found out that, you know, this is somebody, you know, who's highly credible. He'd been in the military, a very successful businessman, was a trained weather spotter, a pilot. You know, his credentials were very, very good. So I arranged to interview him, and he told me about sitting out in his yard. This was about a year and a half ago. Sitting out in his yard at his place over by 101, so about 12 miles outside of Port Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting out in the yard, and he suddenly sees this light coming across the sky from his far right. And it basically arcs across the sky and disappears behind the trees and the foothills to the far left. And then moments later, he sees what appears to be almost like a laser beam shooting up in the sky from just roughly the point where the light stopped behind the trees. This laser beam shot up into the sky, and all of a sudden, the sky opened up into what appeared to be a roiling, boiling mass of flames. No smoke, no debris, no sound. Suddenly, the sky, basically above Port Townsend, was filled full of flames.
Was this a nighttime sighting?
This was about 11 o'clock at night in August.
Got it.
So anyway, I had him come over to my house, and we got on Google Images to see if we could find something that was comparable to what he saw. And we looked through blast furnaces, this and that, and the only thing we could find that was comparable was a nuclear blast. And this is somebody who has had psychic experiences in the past, and who just may be open to frequencies that the average person may not see.
Hmm.
But because of his high credibility, I believe he reported what it was that he had experienced. I have heard no other reports of this, but it makes you wonder if there aren't things going on up there that might be in another frequency that are just beyond. This case perplexed me more than any other case that I've ever investigated. And it doesn't help that it was right above Port Townsend.
Interesting. And finally, Maureen, please tell our listeners everything they need to know if they're interested in learning more about the Olympic UFO Meetup.
Well, the Olympic UFO Meetup, I've been facilitating the group for almost 3 years. And I started it because I realized there was so much interest in this area. And people like me wanted to go out and be with kindred spirits, and there was none. And the very first meetup, this goes back almost 3 years, I held it at the community center downtown, and the room was packed with people going out the door, and there were still people outside who couldn't get in. And that's when I realized this was an area that people had an interest in, and before I set up this meetup, there was no place for people with this common interest to talk about it. It meets on the third Saturday of the month at the Port Townsend Friends Meeting House from 1 to 3,
mm-hmm.
and I try to have a presenter or a focus topic for each meetup because I want it to be a place where people can come and learn versus just coming and talking.
So if mm-hmm. someone who's listening wants mm-hmm. information, in other words, wants to get on your mm-hmm. email list, mm-hmm. as I am on, did they email you?
The best way is to email me at olympic.ufo@gmail.com.
Repeat that again more slowly.
olympic.ufo@gmail.com.
Good. By then, our listeners have picked up their pencil and they've got it.
I can answer any questions that they might have.
So, Maureen Morgan, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. And if you do see something or get a case that mm-hmm. you say, this is tangible proof we are being visited by extraterrestrials, I want you to call KPTZ and we'll get you on the air.
I will call you first.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by David Cunningham. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ, 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm David Cunningham.